Welcome to DLC Live, your source for educational and inspirational interviews with mental health experts and advocates from around the world. Now, here's your host, creator of the DLC Anxiety Worldwide Mental Health Community, Dean Stott.
Today, we're going to be speaking about all things CBT, self-help. And we're going to be speaking to a really cool company. They've got a group of psychologists who put together a self-help CBT journaling book to reduce anxiety. We're going to speak about that and a little bit about CBT and self-help and see how it can reduce anxiety. Hey.
Hey, Dean. How are you?
I am very well, thank you. How are you?
Good, good. Sorry for the delay. I was figuring out the logistics.
Oh, no problem at all. Which part of the world are we in today then?
I'm in Brooklyn, New York. Yeah. Oh,
so we're 12 o'clock, is it? Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, it's noon.
Yeah. How is everything waking up today?
It's upside down, you know. It has been for a while, but it's okay. You know, it's it'll be okay, whatever it is. You know. So we've been doing a lot of that kind of talk, meditations and thoughts, and just realizing that we can control the things in our lives and to kind of do the best that we can. So we've been channeling a lot of that now. The elections have not yet been confirmed. We don't have a winner. So we'll see. It'll be some time, possibly a week or so before we know for certain.
Okay, that's fantastic. For everyone who might not know who you are and what you specialize in, can you just give a brief background about your company, your role in the company, and obviously the product that you guys have fantastically come up with?
Yeah, you bet. You know, first of all, thank you so much for having me, Dean. I'm a big fan of DLC Anxiety. It's really impressive to see the power of community that you've cultivated, and it's heartwarming. Yeah, so thank you. My name is Had Tamir. I'm a developmental psychologist and licensed mental health counselor. I have a private practice here in New York City called The Wiser Place. So it focuses on identity, sexuality, and relationships. The bulk of my work is focused around anxiety in these areas. A few years ago, as kind of my practice was getting set up and you know, hours were getting filled and things were going well, I started to think a little more broadly about scale, you know, about how to have more impact, right? Because there's only so many clients you see in a day, and there's only so many people you can impact directly one-to-one. And a couple friends of mine, Varshal and Wesley, came in. I worked with them previously, and they were starting a company, the Therapy Notebooks, that they wanted to make some positive change in the world of mental health. So we sat down with a team of psychologists.
How many psychologists was it?
About four. We had others that we asked, you know, we kind of checked in with and got feedback from, but we sat down with a group of four psychologists. So we had Diana Hu and Rachel Brenner and Emery Strickland, brilliant psychologists. They all focus on cognitive behavioral therapy and anxiety, and are well versed in the literature and research. So it was really nice to sit around and try to figure out what could we do to make approaching mental health and improving mental health more accessible and less difficult, you know, because I know in my own experience, trying to find the right therapist, trying to understand what kind of therapy I need, took time. And I work in this field. So it was, you know, there are a lot of hoops to go through, and there's a lot of paperwork and a lot of ambiguity. So what we were trying to figure out is what are some gaps in this field that we can help with, you know? Yeah. So on the one hand, there are so many psychologists, many talented psychologists. You know, in a place like New York City, there's very little stigma around mental health and well-being, and people going to therapy and talking about therapy. So that's great. But therapy can be very expensive, and not all insurances cover it. I know in the UK it's a little better in terms of coverage, But it can be a challenge finding the right person, getting the time, seeing if you're comfortable talking with another person that intimately. So that's the one side, you know. And then in the self-help genre, right, there are many good books. Like, we know a lot of tools and we have a lot of information, but what we found is, you know, some of them are very like textbook like, and that's yeah. not cut out for everyone to sit and kind of learn a whole new field. And then there's a lot of fluff, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there that is, you know, might be feel good or inspirational, you know, which has a place, but it's not necessarily evidence-based techniques to help you with your mental health, you know? So that was that accessibility gap is what we decided to focus on, to figure out a way to create a tool that would help people learn the skills that they need to improve. And so it's not just direction, and it's not just kind of, you know, leaving people to you know, sink or swim. It was kind of to walk people through, but also give them the tools that they could learn to change the way they live.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. And your book, would you say that it focuses more on the aspects of CBT rather than journaling, or is it a mixture of both?
Yeah.
And just for everyone who might not know what CBT is and the science-based evidence behind CBT, are you able to just go a little bit into detail of that?
Sure, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so CBT has become like a buzzword. You're definitely right. It warrants some kind of explanation. So cognitive behavioral therapy, you know, developed by Aaron Beck, is a way that we change the way we think about things. So we have this kind of triangle, right, of kind of our cognition, the way we think, and how that makes us feel, and then how we behave because of that. And then our behavior is then interpreted by our mind. So it continues to inform the way we think and how we feel and how we react. So this kind of cycle is what we're talking about. And it's very, very effective in the psychotherapy realm. And it is not only for anxiety, it's very effective for anxiety. It's definitely been tested many times and many studies have been replicated, but we use it, you know, for all kinds of things on the spectrum of mental health. Yeah.
No, that's wonderful. I do have some questions from the followers. So they did submit some questions, if that's all right. I'll fire away with them. So the first one is someone saying, I don't want to go down the medicine route. Is CBT and self-help just as good?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that comes up all the time, you know. If you don't want to go down the medicine route, CBT is an excellent option. So we've had many studies in the literature. We see where the results are comparable. So we know that CBT is very effective, at least as effective as medication. There are some times, you know, when we need to think about, every individual is different, right? So sometimes if someone is in a state of panic and they cannot come to therapy, they can't sit down, they can't formulate the words to kind of express what they need help with, sometimes a little bit of medication or early on treatment is helpful just to get to that place. A pro of CBT versus medication is that it's typically longer lasting. So medication, at some point our body gets used to it and then maybe is a little more resistant, or it's less effective than it is in the beginning. But with CBT, you're learning skills. So you're changing the way you react. You're changing the way you think. You're changing those behaviors, those thoughts. And we learn to interpret those feelings differently. So, you know, I look at it as, you know, let's say I'm dehydrated and develop a headache, right? So I can take some pain relief pills and the headache will go away, right? But it's not taking care of the symptom. It's only taking care of the symptom. It's not taking care of the root problem, right? So CBT is more about getting to the root problem and then moving us away from that problem state. So that in the example would be drinking more water, staying hydrated, you know, keeping my fluid levels up, and the headache goes away automatically. So the question is where we want to attack from. So CBT is a great place to start, absolutely.
Am I right in thinking that the science behind overcoming anxiety disorders would be that it's a combination of both? And would you say that that is because of the reason that you said that maybe people who are going to approach CBT just need to reduce that anxiety level down, possibly with medication first, before they can really like dive into it?
I think it depends on the person, you know. I think that that's definitely a strategy that's used, right? When we're dealing with panic attacks, when we're dealing with a high intensity anxiety, right? That's very concentrated, you know, to certain episodes or a time frame, then medication is a godsend. It's a lifesaver in those situations. And I'm not against that. But if someone comes into my office and says, I don't want medication, you know, CBT is the first thing I would go with, you know, in general. And then if we can work from there, that's ideal. But you know, if there are all kinds of treatments now beyond just pharmaceuticals that we're seeing to be effective, you know, with anxiety. So we're learning more and more about that.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. I think that's a really thorough answer for that, so thank you very much. The next question is, can you explain how journaling reduces anxiety and what happens if I don't feel the effect straight away? So I've had this come up on the community before. I've had DMs from people saying, oh, well, I've tried CBT and it didn't work, so they've almost lost faith in it, or I've tried journaling and it didn't reduce the anxiety. What would your message be to them, people?
Yeah, that's a good question. So there are a few parts there, right? So one part is, you know, and I've heard this as well, you know, I've tried therapy and it didn't work, you know? And to that I say, you got to keep trying. And it's all about the match, right? Maybe CBT is not for you, but narrative therapy is. Maybe this therapist is not just, you're not jiving with that person and you need someone else. And that's all okay. So as long as we're on the pursuit of self-betterment, we can find what works for us. And for some people, you know, one-to-one therapy doesn't work, but group therapy does. Or an online forum is the way that works for them, you know? So there are really many avenues to kind of bettering our mental health and to coming to terms and learning to manage and cope with anxiety. So that's like one part. You know, what do we do when things don't work? We keep trying, but we change the mechanism, right? Or we change the what we're using to get to that same goal, right? In terms of journaling, it's really fascinating, you know, and this speaks to kind of what people are capable of on their own, right? So when we have to pause, when we have to stop and think about our experience, kind of like a from a bird's eye view, where we need to tell a story about it. It helps us separate a little bit from that experience. It helps us understand that that experience is not still harming us. There's some separation there, right? Having to articulate those thoughts, having to regulate our emotions when we're thinking about it, kind of accessing that information, gives us, it kind of fosters this intellectual process. And that pulls us away from this cycle, the cycling that we do with anxiety, right? Where we get stuck in these loops. So this kind of forces us to tell a story. So those are some reasons why journaling is very effective. What I love about this product, about this book, is that it kind of has something for everyone. So if you want to open the book and learn something, you have check-ins. You have, you know, a mini lesson. You got some prompts. So sometimes I'll open a journal. And I don't know what I want to write. I know that I want to keep writing, but I don't know exactly, I don't have a purpose necessarily. So we have those kind of guide, you know, those posts to kind of help us along. But then if you want to just really use it as a journal and just write and it's just cathartic to write whatever it is that you're writing, we have that option too. So I kind of like that balance. But I think what we learn with time of exploring ourselves and our lives is that we need a holistic approach to health in general, right? We need to bring in all kinds of resources, right? We want to improve. We want our social life to be where we want it to be. We want our self-care to be where we want it to be. We want to sleep properly and eat properly. So therapy is a part of it. It's an important part, but it won't cure everything. You know, the
No.
idea is kind of the journey, right, of self-betterment.
It's almost like you say, it's a lifestyle, isn't it? It's the whole change. Having the routine, having the sleep. Obviously, we know that sleeping and anxiety go hand in hand. So lack of sleep can cause anxiety, and anxiety can cause lack of sleep. So that can become a cycle as well. Do you have any tips on someone who may be struggling getting to sleep? Would you say journaling something to good to do before like a nighttime or part of a nighttime routine?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's funny that you mentioned sleep because it's one of the new projects we're working on, is a sleep specific journal.
Brilliant.
There is a CBTI, which is cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, and it's extraordinarily effective. But what I like to do when I'm working with someone with sleep issues, and what you described is perfect because it's those cycles, right? It's kind of we don't sleep enough, and then we're anxious about not sleeping, and then that our anxiety is keeping us up, and we get stuck in these loops, and then that is effect causing the next step kind of to keep perpetuating. So what I like to focus on is what we call sleep hygiene, right? So it's not, we lay down and expect to miraculously check out or fall asleep, and that it doesn't work like that. Our minds are so active. We have so much stimulation in our day and our screens and news and the whole world around us. We got so much coming at us that it's really hard to just, turn the lights out and that's it, you're sleeping, So several hours before sleep, it's beneficial to start that process, right? So are we dimming the lights? Are we listening to soft music? Are we having some herbal tea, reading? Finding the things that bring us more calm so that it's more of a transition to sleep as opposed to, fully excited and up to comatose. It's hard to take that plunge.
No, that's wonderful. And when is that out? Just out of interest, you said you're working on that new journal.
So we have a short-term and long-term projects. So our short-term projects, we're hoping within a few months to put out anxiety for younger people. So for adolescents and young adults. So similar to the cognitive behavioral guided journal that we have to put one out for younger people. CBTI, so focusing on insomnia and sleep problems. Helping people with sleep hygiene, which we've received so many requests and so much feedback for that. So that's huge. And then I think we want to work on growth mindset. So kind of helping people move past kind of a rigid frame of mind and move more towards growth, which is very effective for many things, especially depression.
No, that's wonderful. Next question is it better to avoid overthinking or let it pass?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's wonderful. I tend to think of anxiety as this kind of tug of war, and we're fighting for mental real estate, right? Like, how much energy can we give to this problem? How much do we want to let it take over? So I think the short answer is that it depends, right? It's sometimes, if we can avoid, if we can distract ourselves and we can immerse ourselves in something else, then that's great. Because, we come to learn what anxiety is and what it feels like and sounds like. And no matter how real it is to us, we tend to learn, like, okay, I know this is a powerful feeling or a thought that I'm having, but I don't necessarily need to focus on it. I don't need to remedy it. It could just be, right? So one way to deal with it is the avoidance. But it's I want to clarify what that means, right? So the way I see it is there's distracting ourselves with doing something else that we're immersed in, right? Not to just act unfocused, but to focus on something, like to lose ourselves in a book or go for a run or do whatever it is that kind of lets our mind focus on something else. And subliminally, what we're telling ourselves is that this fear cannot be that important. It's not that real of a threat if I'm going on a run, right? If so it's kind of it's negotiating, but it's putting our mind somewhere else. Sometimes those feelings are so overwhelming we can't avoid it. We can't. It consumes us, right? So in those situations, it's okay to sit with it. it's okay. Instead of trying to fight with it all the time and to spend so much energy trying to keep the door closed, is to recognize what it is and let it be. So I think of it as kind of like motion sickness. Like imagine you're on a train and you feel nauseous, right? You can't get off the train right now. You know, that you can try to make yourself comfortable, have some water, have a warm drink, put your legs up, you know, like figure out a way to be comfortable. But this is just something that you're going to have to sit with. The point that what we want to avoid is the wrestling with it, trying to ignore it so much that it consumes us. That's the part that we want to stay away from. Either we say, I'm doing something else and I'm not doing this now, or this is a really uncomfortable feeling. I know it's going to pass, but right now I don't feel great. Also fine, you know? But that middle place where we're really trying to protect ourselves, we're trying so hard to like eradicate it. And that approach has to change. We have to say, like, I don't need to eradicate it. This thing is, and I'll be okay. I always am. And, you know, it'll just be uncomfortable for a bit. One thing I like to tell people I work with is that thoughts aren't threats and feelings aren't facts. You know, so you know, you can think of something, it's not a real threat necessarily. It's just something that sounds scary or feels scary, you know, one of those what if situations. And just because I'm feeling concerned, my heart rate is up and I'm nervous, doesn't mean that there's a factual or reality-based concern.
And I think that's where the anxious mind almost gets confused, isn't it? When someone has an irrational thought and then they have the physical sensations, a lot of anxious people then almost see that as evidence that the anxious thought, oh, well, that must be real because I'm feeling like this. So what I actually say to a lot of people is two people can have the exact same thought, but completely different reactions to that thought. And one person could accept that thought, let it be, and have an emotional response that's calming. Someone else could have the exact same thought, perceive that as a threat, and then have an anxious response to that. So I always get asked, how do I get rid of these irrational thoughts? Now, in my mind, it's not about getting rid of the irrational thoughts, it's about changing your behavior to them.
Yeah, I think you said it perfectly. That's exactly how we react to it, because we're on this feedback loop, you know. Our mind is watching our body, right? So kind of how we react informs if we need to reinforce this behavior or this fear, if it's a legitimate fear, or if it's not. If it's something that we feel uncomfortable, but since we're acting normal, I guess things are normal, you know? So we're kind of checking in all the time. And yeah, that's exactly it. We change how we react to it. And that begins that process of changing that path. Yeah.
The next question is, can a therapy book really replace actual therapy?
That's a great point. Great question. So this comes back to what we were saying, right? The lifestyle kind of approach to wellness, right? So we're not looking for like, oh, what is that cure-all? What's that one thing that's going to just fix everything? What's that magic pill? But I don't think of it as a replacement. So in my practice, many of my clients use the notebook. And so we'll meet once a week and they'll come in, you know, with four or five, six entries, then we'll review them. So it gives us, you know, one thing that I felt about therapy, you know, even as a younger person, one thing that, you know, it's 1 hour or 45-minute check-in once a week, maybe twice a week, and then you're off on your own for all the rest of the time. You're like back into your life. So it's hard to kind of bring those lessons into our day-to-day life and in the right moments to kind of like, oh, this is something I'm thinking about. This is a thought that I want to delve into. So I look at it as a way to complement therapy. At the same time, what we really wanted to do with this notebook is to meet people where they're at. And not everyone is open to therapy. Not everyone can go, even if they wanted to go. It doesn't. So the way I see it is wherever you are, if you're in therapy, it can help you, you know, alongside. It can be a good companion, you know. And if you're not in therapy, it's definitely helpful and useful. But I don't think of it them as competing.
No, definitely. And like you say, Obviously, in America, the health system's a little bit different than the UK. So, if someone is unable to access private therapy, then this is the excellent tool to really dive into because it has the expertise behind the creating of this notebook. And I think it's almost, yeah, it's an excellent thing really to dive into.
I think we're at an interesting point place, right, in life, right? We have so much access to information, right? So, I don't know if you've heard the term, like people diagnose themselves with like Dr. Google, or Dr. WebMD, So we have access to so much information. So for people who will not be going to therapy for whatever reason, this is kind of a good way. I think of it as like you can go to medical school or you can learn first aid, So with this book, you kind of have like first aid. Like here are some quick tips that you can work on that will help you, if you adopt them. Then this is how you do it. So instead of just kind of holding their hand and walking them through, it's kind of like here's the blueprint. And see what works with you and for you. And then people can navigate if they want more support or that's enough or they want to dive deeper,
Yeah, no, I think that's wonderful. And I think it, like you say about Dr. Google as well, because there is so much information there. I think having a therapy book like this that does have the accredited psychologist behind it, you just know what you're getting. You know that you're getting real CBT structure journaling from people who deal and teach this on a daily basis, where sometimes you can go down a Google route. And you just don't know how credible all the sources are on Google.
I feel the same way. It's that you it's like the Wild West, who you don't know what is accurate and what's not.
So the last question from the followers is, where do intrusive thoughts come from, and why do we get them? And if I do get them, should I be scared of them?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's something we've been studying for a long time. Where do these thoughts fall from, right? Like where, like how do we just go, have a normal day and then suddenly we start having these kind of attacks of thoughts of terrible things that can happen, right? So what we know so far in studying the brain, right, and how our brain works is that our subconscious is constantly scanning for threats, right? And that's evolutionary, right? It just kind of we have it in our psyche deeply embedded to stay safe and to protect ourselves, right? So we're constantly scanning for threats. Typically, that remains in the subconscious unless there is a real threat that we recognize as a problem, and then we kind of let the rest of our mind know, or we inform ourselves so we can act appropriately. Sometimes these thoughts, even when they're in the subconscious, they elicit certain reactions in us, an emotional reaction, like fear, right? So we got all this stuff working on the back burner. But then suddenly I feel gripped with fear. My heart rate's going up. I'm in a cold sweat. I don't know what it is, but I don't feel comfortable. And that's when we're kind of susceptible to the awareness of these thoughts. So we start to think about these perceived threats, And our brain has not yet gotten to a point where we're good at discerning between real threats and imagined threats. And that's It's really interesting because the mind is so incredible, but we feel the same, when we're having a panic attack and if our l hair was literally on fire, we feel the same. The danger is the same. And that's what's some hard for people who haven't experienced anxiety. It's hard for them to understand that, and they're well-meaning when they'll say things like, "Oh, don't worry," or "You'll be okay," or "It's fine," and that doesn't help because that is a direct contradiction of what we're feeling, what we're literally palpably experiencing. So knowing that is a first step. Knowing that we can feel totally panicked and we can have scary thoughts that are not based in reality and that we're not crazy because of it, that's the first step, The second thing we want to think about is how much energy and how much time do we want to put into these thoughts? Once we recognize that everyone has weird thoughts that pop into their head, and usually we just kind of swat them away. But in the event that they are kind of intrusive, or they're kind of annoying us, or hanging around. What do we do with that? You know, so knowing that there is no necessarily real danger, that we can feel like we're in danger and not be in danger, right? So getting comfortable with that feeling, right? Similar like the nausea idea. We're uncomfortable. It's a legitimate feeling. It doesn't make it a fact. We're not really, you know, threatened by it, you know. And then we can start with the distractions, thinking about different things. What do we want to involve ourselves with? What, again, it's that tug of war. You know, we can control what our mind focuses on. How much time and effort do we want to give here? We know that the house is not on fire. We know that we will be okay. And we have to tell ourselves that sometimes, even though we feel differently. So it's learning, I think of it as a little bit of like a dance. It's learning to move with this anxiety and learning to understand like, okay, this is something that feels horrible. It's something that's kind of annoying me and attacking me, but I know that it'll go away. I know that it's not real, and that's okay. So kind of that's the approach that we start with.
I think one of the amazing and annoying things about anxiety is that no matter how many times you've had this anxious response, when you get that anxious response, the mind almost tricks you into thinking, well, what if this time it doesn't go away? But when you think about that like more deeply, that's just the body's reaction of what it should be doing in that it should be protecting you. So if you're not feeling like this and it was a threat that was imminent, you wouldn't be able to respond to that. And like you mentioned, just so interestingly, the difference between perceived threats and real threats that the mind can doesn't know the difference of what's perceived and what's real. So I think that, yeah, when you are feeling anxious and you feel that, well, what if this time it doesn't go away, then that is something that you should be able to sit with and just know that that's anxiety at play.
Yeah, I think that's really well put, you know, just kind of recognizing that this is the nature of the beast, that it kind of preys on those fears and those uncertainties. And we'll hold on to something that has 1 ounce of truth and add, you know, 99 ounces of fear, you know, and exacerbation. So there is something there, you know. Something that also helps is I'll deal with that when it comes to it. You know, if this is something that is, you know, a real problem, then when it is a real problem, I'll deal with that. Instead of trying to anticipate or prevent or be preemptive about it, to say that I, you know, I have the tools, I have the knowledge, I have the ability to deal with whatever comes my way. Right now, that's not happening. Right now, all of those fears are not occurring. So I can choose if I want to. That's where we incorporate kind of a Buddhist approach, right? About being in the moment and being centered and focusing on now. We can't control the future. We can't correct the past. How do we kind of just stay in this moment? And mindfulness, meditation, and those things are very helpful in forcing ourselves to slow that down. Yeah.
No, that's wonderful. No? That's a lovely place to end it as well. For everyone who wants to purchase the book, I've seen it in the comments. Is it a book that's worldwide? So I've seen some people from the UK asking if they can grab the book. Also, where's the best place they can get it from?
Yeah. The book is available worldwide, right? It's on therapynotebooks.com, therapynotebooks.com. We ship everywhere. It's really interesting, you know, because we completed the book in June, you know, and it was the middle of COVID and there's a lot going on and we didn't want to wait. You know, there are people who really could use, many of us, right, can use these tools and we wanted to get it out, but we didn't have kind of a big formal launch that you would have typically, right? Yeah. But it's been kind of flying off the shelves. It's been a few months and I don't know, maybe 20,000 copies. It looks like we're going to double those sales like within a month or so. So what that tells us is that there is some serious demand and then people need and want to learn these skills. You know, they want evidence-based skills. They don't just want some fluff. They don't want some, you know, some run around or some, Google rabbit hole. They kind of want these things to empower them. So it's definitely available. We hope to have more topics out. I think we're going to do a little bit of a pivot after this anxiety book and focus more on the skills in general. So let's say cognitive behavioral therapy techniques, and then everyone could apply it in their way.
I think that's wonderful. And I think what you said about this book isn't for someone who's just at the start of it is for someone who's just at the start of an anxiety disorder, but it can also be for someone who's at the end, who's recovered. This can be used for anyone.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, journaling in general is so helpful. And then when you have those little posts and those guidelines to kind of help focus your attention on our mental health and self-betterment, yeah, it's pretty cool. I use it regularly, and I don't have active anxiety right now, but I find it to be very effective. I have my 13-year-old son uses it too, so it kind of is, it's interesting to see how it can be used differently.
No, that's wonderful. And just regarding, like you say, the upcoming projects in the short term, it's really exciting that CBTI, because the sleep question, I couldn't stress how many times I get asked about, how can I help my sleep routine? I'm anxious, I just can't get to sleep. I really think the demand for that would be high as well. So you said a time frame for that. Are we looking at this side of the new, or this side of the year, or would you say into the new year?
Probably early next year.
Okay.
I think we should have some books out. Some other things we're working on is kind of a, we're right now collaborating with psychologists, doctors, mentors, coaches, designers to try to come together with more broad options for people to aid in their mental health kind of journey, right? So we're using, aside from these books that we're working on, we're looking at kind of digital journaling, kind of like a master class approach to certain specific disorders or problems, or how to, let's say, do CBT, how to go through sleep hygiene. So I'd love to hear, I know that you have many listeners and viewers. If there is something that you feel or that you're hearing that is in a high demand or that is lacking, let's talk about that and figure out ways to help, because right now we're that's where our head is.
No, that's wonderful. And to all the followers, I will be saving this live, and also in the stories, we'll do a swipe up so everyone can grab the book. That just leads me to say thank you very much for everything that you're doing for the mental health community. I think it's a wonderful idea. I think it's brilliant how you've got different psychologists around this. And like you say, you've seen a real gap in the market for people who may not be able to have access to the traditional route of therapy. Just the more awareness and the more tools and the more techniques and advice we can give, then obviously the better we're all going to cope, especially in this testing situation. So thank you very much for your time today. I really appreciate it. And your expertise, I learned some things as well. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you, Dean. It was my pleasure.
You've been listening to DLC Live. Be sure to follow Dean on Instagram at DLC Anxiety. Check our website at dlcanxiety.com and grab yourself a copy of our latest book, Untangle Your Anxiety, on Amazon today. See you next time.